Good day, my EOS friends. Wow, we have something special for you today. We have EOS Writer teamed up with the EOS Podcast, the first podcast in EOS history, and we're bringing to you a double episode of Brendan and Dan talking about voice, talking about EOS.io and where it's going, block one, a little bit of info on high fidelity. We go down the rabbit hole in the matrix. As you can imagine, when you talk to Brendan Bloomer and Dan Larimer for almost an hour, you pick some pretty rad nuggets. So thank you, Dimitri from the EOS Writer, who is half of this interview. And let's just dive in. Without further ado, here's my first question for Dan and Brendan.
I just wanted to geek out with you guys a little bit because a lot of times I'm talking about this like NFTs, blockchain, social media, and virtual reality, and how it can kind of blur the lines between our reality and the computer world. What do you guys think of that? Or what are your thoughts on like kind of where that goes down the road?
Is that a question of do we live in the matrix already?
Yeah, or like are we going into the matrix? Or you know what's going on? It seems like we're at a tipping point as far as
our lives are increasingly digital. Uh-huh. We've got new forms of value. Our identities are more and more digital. You know, one of our EOSVC projects, High Fidelity, is all about combining virtual reality, augmented reality, with EOS. So we're really excited to see all these things converge. Yeah, I actually got my start in virtual reality.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I saw High Fidelity pivoted now to
virtual
kind of
offices.
To virtual offices, and they're making it open source. They're making their metaverse open source.
They had found that a little history behind it is a lot of the demand for their technology was coming from like work-based applications to bridge communication gaps, and so they saw a bigger commercial opportunity move in that direction, at least to start. But yeah, they're a very interesting company. They're actually the creators of Second Life. I don't know if you ever heard of that game.
Yeah, Philip Rosendale. I've been trying to get him on the podcast for a while, actually, but he's been in stealth mode a little bit with probably,
fair.
Yeah,
he's
of course.
Smart.
Yeah, he's a really interesting character. Do you guys think there's some sort of like inroads for blockchain and VR at some point?
Well, blockchain works with any application that has a database that needs authenticated, secure users. We think that digital assets are going to be the future of so many things, and virtual worlds are full of digital assets. So there's a huge opportunity there.
What about for like EOS.io specifically?
EOS.io is the most flexible, most powerful, most scalable blockchain, as you know. So it's ideally suited for dealing with these things. We can have more assets and trade them and use them in more ways. So we really believe that the development environment we put forward with EOS.io will make it easier for developers to build these type of things.
It's almost like the governance could be tested out in virtual worlds. You get all these full societies with economies and full governance and full structures and everything that we have in the outdoor or in the real world, kind of mirrored in the VR world.
There are a lot of challenges with the VR world. I think that it's just another interface, an interface that happens to make people sick. It's a lot harder to develop for. So I think it's kind of nerdy. It's kind of cool. I'm really impressed with how the technology's advanced since I was doing virtual reality back in 2003. But I think that the bigger impacts of blockchain will probably exist in the real world mm-hmm. versus the virtual world. Mm-hmm.
So then let's talk about the real world. Let's talk about the token we have. As far as the announcement, I feel like secure IDs was kind of the big part of the announcement that was almost like glossed over. For me, it was one of the things that seems like to be a huge change. Can you tell people other things unique ID is going to be used for? Like what's that impact that going to have?
Once you have unique ID, it solves so many things because people have reputation that you can build off of unique IDs. You can do more decentralized governance solutions. So it might even be able to decentralize the governance of EOS if the community wants to have a combination of democratic and stake-weighted voting. So there's all types of applications, even things like decentralized Uber and so forth. There's lots of people that are trying to solve this problem, and any business that depends upon regulatory compliance in different jurisdictions, you can now do those types of things on blockchain, because your smart contract can take into account the jurisdiction of various users without requiring everyone to go through all the verification processes to do things. So we really think that's providing a lot of value and will enable a whole new realm of decentralized applications that are just not possible without it.
So how are you planning to do the secure unique ID?
We have a number of techniques, and it's going to vary based upon jurisdiction and so forth, but it will involve government documents to some extent, just for regulatory reasons. But the identity information, some of it will be on the blockchain, just your name, but we're not putting your government documents on the blockchain. We're not doxing everyone. We're just doing the minimum information so that everyone can audit and know that these are real people. And that's just the foundation. We don't believe that every application needs to be built with real ID. It's just another option to fill a niche and enable a whole new set of opportunities that didn't exist beforehand. There's already tons of platforms, which like, and EOS has pseudo-anonymous accounts, and people can do that today. So we're actually opening up a new use case, which will just create more opportunities for Block One and the EOS public network.
So outside of government IDs, or, you know, given the correct regulatory environment, outside of government IDs, what ways are there to KYC someone?
Well, KYC implies government IDs. That's mm-hmm. a regulatory term. But unique user verifications mm-hmm. can be done using social connections.
Okay.
And we have some very interesting things in the future, but we can't discuss right now.
Okay, cool. And so there's probably some regulations limiting some of the UX that you guys can provide as far as getting people onboarded really easily there.
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about UBI and maybe a tie-in with voice? And if
sure.
That's,
so this is one of the first applications that strongly benefits from having unique verified users. Every user who signs up for voice gets tokens every single day that they're active on the platform. So you show up, you get tokens. The token model that we're using is people show up the first year, get a lot more tokens than the people who show up the 10th year. Mm-hmm. But every single year, everyone gets the same tokens every single day. It's just, so really want to encourage adoption and have a nice, stable, steady state so people are given voice daily and they can use that voice to influence the platform.
And so the early adopters are going to be, you're going to be benefited to be there the first year. What about the first month? What about the first?
Well, that's one of the things why we're doing this phased rollout. Mm-hmm. We announced voice. Now we're collecting a whole bunch of emails of all the people that are interested in signing up to beta test it. And then we can roll it out to everyone at the same time. So everyone can kind of start at the same place. We don't want to give the first 100 people through the door a huge heads up. So we're trying to make things as fair as possible, and also to bootstrap a network, you kind of need to have a lot of people at once so it doesn't feel like an empty room. Mm-hmm. So you throw in a party, you allow everyone, you collect everyone, you let them know, you say, all right, go. So we're doing a very strategic phase launch approach. So
that makes sense. So you're trying to get the most fair token distribution possible.
Yes.
And how are the you talked about how the tokens would be distributed, or the maybe is there going to be a cap on tokens? Is there going to be inflation? Is there going to be
tokens? The number of tokens is proportional to the number of users, and on top of that, there's a small amount of inflation used to reward contents that people like.
It has a constant process of increasing or token supply, but also decreasing them through burning them, through using them various ways away. So
people,
tokens are constantly coming into circulation and out simultaneously.
Yeah, when people voice it to move their content to the top, a portion of the tokens are burned.
Okay.
So it's a dynamic supply based off of a number of variables. So.
And how are rewards, how are the tokenomics around rewards as far as if you post content and it gets a certain amount of upvotes versus voice?
Sure. We try to take a lot of lessons from Steemit in building it. And it's the number of unique users, not the number of tokens they have. So the more people who like it, the more rewards you get, and it's somewhat exponential at first, but then the degree of which it's exponential decays as it you just get lots of content. So it really discourages people from just voting for a couple of their friends, because if you just get one or two likes, you don't really get anything. But if you get hundreds or thousands of likes, you start to get lots of rewards. So that's how the like aspect works. The voice it aspect is actually what differentiates voice from Steemit. And the idea here is if you discover content that you like, and you think other people are going to like it and voice it after you. You voice it, someone comes after you, they voice it, you get your money back plus some. Right? And each time someone voices it, the cost of voicing it goes up. Right? And so if you find good content early, you make money. Or you earn voice, I guess is the more accurate way of saying it. You earn voice. And that we believe that those dynamics will encourage people to go and find good content and bring it to the attention of other people. And it's the people who are spending voice that are driving the visibility of content on the platform. Not just the content that other people produce, but when you voice it, you also get to boost your own voice in relation to that content.
Yeah, your Pixel Master analogy, I think, paints a really good picture of someone for people of how that how that dynamic works and how, but you're just bumping it down one. So, is there a minimum, or if I'm the first comment, let's say, can I voice it? If I don't voice it, I'm going to be at the top. But let's say I'm the second comment, and I can put 5 voice or 100 voice, or is there?
It grows by a fixed percentage, 30% every time.
It's fixed.
So
okay.
It goes from 0.1 voice to 0.13 voice, and it keeps going exponentially. So it gets more and more expensive to voice it as it goes on and as the content rises. And then after 24 hours without anyone voicing it, it's locked in and no one else can voice it.
Okay, so if it stays, so there's not a limit on how long something can stay popular or talked about, basically.
The limit is people run out of money willing to voice it.
Yeah,
it gets more and more expensive.
Okay, makes sense. And so the trending then is based on the voice or the upvote?
The voice
of the voice it only. The voice it only.
You can rank it many different ways, but voice is going to be the one we're going to feature.
Okay. And then the rewards for the content creators are, it's an algorithm between
when you voice it, you're rewarding both the previous person who voiced it and the author at the same time.
Okay.
And then some is burned. So it's kind of split 3 ways there. And that's going to really make sure that if you produce content that lots of people want to voice, you're rewarded. And then liking is an independent system, so you can get rewards for both being voiced and for being liked.
Okay, so the liking is, how much weight is to the likes?
I don't remember the exact number there, but a couple percent of inflation.
We haven't put the full economic model out.
Okay.
We're still doing a lot of internal financial modeling based on various types of
The inflation
variables.
Rate's a variable that we will tweak, but there's a fixed amount of inflation that's distributed to likes.
And if it's one account, one vote, if I upvote 1,000 articles in a day, is it the same if I upvote 5 articles in a day?
No, you can only have a limited number of, you can like thousands of things, but
it'll diminish.
There's only a fixed number of them that count toward the like rewards, and like rewards work similar after something hasn't received a like in 24 hours. It's
okay.
Locked down. So if you like something that's really popular, it might reserve one of your spots until that one's locked down.
Well, these are all very early iterations of the economic model.
Mm-hmm.
It's likely that there'll be some variations when it actually comes to market based off of certain types of things.
The main thing is this is not a platform where the community is, I guess, in charge of the economics. We're reserving the right to tweak and adjust the economics to provide the right incentives over time. Of course, with complete transparency of what's going on.
We want to be very upfront about that, iterative process, because we believe that without iteration, there's limited ability to progress. So we're doing something very new, and it's going to evolve a lot from year 1 to year 10. We want to make sure we maintain all that flexibility in the best interest of everyone using the platform, obviously. So
yeah, well, we want to make sure that our incentives are aligned to maximize with the community's incentives. So that's that's the goal of everything we do, is to provide a level playing field for everyone, to make sure that we've got a fair, civilized platform, and that if there is rampant abuse, but some people figure out some way of gaming the system, that we can create countermeasures in a timely manner to preserve the integrity of the community.
Yeah, that's one of the quick iteration is going to be one of the big improvements over what we saw happen with Steemit. So that'll be wonderful.
And the big thing with Steemit is that it lacked the identity. So
yeah.
What that led to process was two problems. It was just the inability to autonomously recognize value and distribute it, and the inability to prevent an economic model that, because you couldn't rely on identity or unique likes and these types of things, we relied on token balance, or they relied on token balances, and that made it difficult to prevent the wealthier from getting wealthier. So this solves both of those things. And I think it's a fundamental game changing, not just on the economics of the token, but the actual whole user experience of the platform.
Yeah. And we believe that eventually there'll be lots of voice-like communities governed by different people. So we're not the only people that are setting the rules for tokens, but there'll be variations on it with different distribution models and so forth. So maybe one's focused toward news, or one's focused towards different subgroups, like subreddits on Reddit. So we can really scale. But that's the long-term vision, is to make sure that everyone's got a voice, that everyone is associating with the people who they want to associate with. Because a lot of the problems with social media is, if you're not with like the majority, you get abused. But we want to make sure that both the majority and the minorities have a home on our platform,
while making sure that Voice, the company, Block One, stays aligned with its user base.
Yep.
Everything we do, every monetization strategy, every economic model, every token model, we focus on making sure that our interests don't diverge to a degree where we're ever operating in contrary to what's best for the people.
And you said you see a lot of other almost forks of Voice. You see other people building platforms utilizing Voice. Are you talking about Block One building?
When we create the identity on a blockchain, we believe that a lot of people will use that, whether it's for things like decentralized Uber or new governance models or alternative social media takes. So there's going to be lots of opportunities.
And to be quite honest, about how social media scales into subgroups and decentralization and alternative moderation, all these types of things, a lot of it's really going to come down to the evolving regulatory landscape on a global scale. Social media has become very much into the eyes of the regulators. And so how we have a certain set of values that we want to offer to the community. Dan's very public about those values. And we're always doing our best to offer them within the context of the legal constraints. And those are extremely high evolution right now, especially for social media. Every country's taking a different approach on content and social media, and it's going to play out in one of many different ways. And so we'll constantly be responding to those variables.
And all these variables are jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis. So there, you'll see communities, the US community will be different than the Chinese community, 100%. Which will be different than the Russian community. So it's just serving everyone's needs with custom catered solution is the future, and because it's not a one size fits all on social media.
The existing regulations apply huge constraints on what can and can't be done. So what we're always trying to do is marry our values with what actually can legally be done, and so. You'll continue to see that in our products.
Is that why you guys are in D.C.?
No, I mean, D.C. is biggest city of Blacksburg.
it's an international city with quick location to Hong Kong and Blacksburg. And
but we are starting to establish some offices in the area here as well.
Yeah. That's good. Lots of good talent for the type of things we need is in the area. And of course, we're constantly dealing with regulators and government, so this is an ideal place to interface.
The majority of the time we spend with regulators and politicians and stuff is an education-based role. So they're very hungry to learn more about blockchain. A lot of them are very receptive. And we have a really good relationship with all of them. So we're focusing on continuing to be a pioneer in that education process, hopefully being an ambassador for the whole industry, but obviously it has big implications to our business as well.
I saw a IBM commercial during the NBA Finals yesterday. Did you guys see that IBM blockchain commercial?
I didn't see it.
It mentioned, they talked about blockchain, they talked about blockchain wallets, and like they kind of, I mean, it was pretty eye-opening for me. It seems like it's getting out there. What's your guys' marketing type of, you guys going to be doing big
stuff
like that?
You'll see our marketing for the next 6 months.
Okay.
The first step is to get our community on board and make sure, and really allow the EOS community to go through that beta process, make sure that the product is at really, really ready to bring in mainstream.
We'll be marketing voice and EOS AI.
And are you guys going to be doing more interviews and getting out there? I know that leading up to the launch, it kind of, you were a little bit stealth mode. Are you guys going
to
be getting out there more?
What you should hope is that we don't. Because when we're not doing interviews, we're building, right?
Yeah.
And they're extremely time consuming. And so what you saw in the early days, you know, me and Dan, we did do a lot because the primary focus was to start spreading the awareness for what we do. But now, what I find is that we're getting incremental benefit from these types of things. So what we try to do is kind of concentrate them around specific events and milestones so we can maximize the value without taking away from progress. So that's what you see with B1Ju, right? So we've spent many months in advance, and we're already starting to plan, if you can believe it or not, the next one, a year later. So the lead times to these things are coming up earlier and earlier so that we can make better production and just make things everything more polished.
Okay, cool. How about the Joe Rogan podcast?
How about the what?
The Joe Rogan podcast. I think it might be the biggest podcast in the world. Never heard of it?
I am so busy building things, I can't pay attention to all the media that's out there.
Yeah, of course.
I've heard of it, but I don't tune in.
Okay. Well, I've been plugging you guys to them for like 6 months now. So maybe someday.
We got a great team of people here to help us interface with the media, and I think we're getting to a point where it's easier. And the biggest challenge with all the marketing, the media engagements, until there's the onboarding ramp for voice or even EOS public network, it's kind of anticlimactic. Oh, great, and what do I do? And you lose them, so it's a lot of wasted energy.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that everything's there so the first impression of users coming in is as high as possible so you can retain them.
Yeah. How is this growing so fast, like, personally for you, as this grows so fast? Because you're such a free thinker. I've been watching you on social, Telegram, and things like that since BizShares, and all these cool ideas and like kind of big thinking. Now that this has grown so big, what's that like? Are you still?
I'm so excited working with Brendan to have such an amazing team at Block One that's excited about my values of making the world a better, freer place. And we've got a lot of initiatives on a lot of fronts to do that. It's really about laying the groundwork, and that's what voice is. It's the groundwork for more things in the future, and I can't imagine working with a better team or moving faster than what we have here.
It's kind of like the best use for these big ideas is have this really good framework to put it into a vehicle to get all that to market action.
Yeah, it's exciting that we have the resources and everything to make these things happen, but these things take time, and no amount of money can replace the time it takes to build developers to prepare the market for the ideas and so forth. But we have big visions.
Yeah, for me, Block One is a platform to just create more products that create more alignment throughout society. I'm a big believer that almost all the problems we have can be fixed through alignment. Whether it's government or social media platforms, technology platforms in general, usually the crux of the big issues are because there's one group of people that aren't aligned with another. So that's what we're trying to do with voice. That's what we try to do with EOSIO. We try to align the token holders with the block production. So you see that consistent theme about things we put forth.
Transparency, integrity, quality, those are the things we believe in.
Has it been harder for you guys now that you have basically a decent amount of funding, has it changed at all, or has it been hard for you to kind of stay on that path? Or lay the
having a lot of funding to double-edged sword, you got a lot to lose, so we have to be very careful in everything we do.
I think that's the biggest change, is our risk appetite gets adjusted to the amount of faith. You know, capital in a lot of ways is a lot of faith that the community we build in terms of how much. And so when we're put up on that pedestal, you know, we have to be very careful about every step that we take, because it is different. And that's been the biggest change. But I think other than that, in terms of our focus, our objectives, our values, really it's just allowed us to expedite our vision at a faster rate. That's it.
Yeah, that seems like it was one of the kind of the big FUD worry that you hear. It's like, oh, they have too much money, you know, to make, but it.
And we're trying to be good stewards of everything and making sure that we.
Do you know what? The reality is, it's the opposite. Because the public scrutiny that comes along with so much having been so successful in the token sale, not just from the community but from the whole world. Actually, it forces focus and commitment, 100%. So I think it is exactly the opposite effect on what it actually does. When it's not like Elon Musk can't just walk away from Tesla. Put it that way. You become very committed to what you started. Through this process, so I think it's had 100% the opposite effect.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure to deliver.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you guys sitting with me. This has been killer.
Of course. I'm so glad that you can make it.
Yeah, it's been amazing, Tom.
So what's your take on everything?
I'm excited. For me, since I've been producing content, and I was. And steam it for so long. The idea of a new social media platform that has these fun tokenomics and new model to try out. I'm pumped. I can't wait. And it gives me a tool. That was my entry into blockchain, was basically when I finally dove deep, was because of steam it. So I think it's like, I think it's this tool where now all of a sudden I can bring one of my friends in and be like, hey, this is blockchain.
It wasn't until I saw I had never even signed up for Steemit, but I was brought into the space on a serious level because of Steemit. Because it wasn't until I saw Steemit, not just its technical scalability, but its application, that I had that moment for understanding how broad scale the implications of blockchain was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until it's a way to touch and use blockchain and see, oh, that's what it does, as opposed to, it's such an abstract thought, it's so... out there, people try to wrap their head around it, all these different ways of explaining it. But here, just go.
People need to use it, not know they're using blockchain. Mm-hmm. And Steemit was the first app to achieve that. And with EOS.io, we're generalizing it, and we're trying to teach and demonstrate to other developers how they can make blockchain transparent.
I think one of the things you're going to see, people are going to realize, the community is going to realize over the next 6 months, that by creating a new blockchain-based social media platform, with huge on-ramps into bringing people into the EOS public blockchain, with huge incentives for signups, ultimately then creating a platform, potentially millions of identities that can be used to create identity-enabled applications. The idea of a DAC, right, that everyone's excited about, there isn't a lot of them because they have to autonomously recognize value, right? The blockchain needs to be able to know what's valuable and print these things, and you need to be able to create formulaic systems that can be competitive. Well, you need identity for that, for almost all applications of it, right? Meaningful applications of it. So without identity, they can be spam, they can be game, these types of things. So really, this is a huge on-ramp, really. This is the type of thing that will take something like the EOS public blockchain its full potential mainstream. And I think that in 6 months or so, when the community starts to see what's developing, and they really have a chance to reflect on everything we put forth, they'll realize that there's absolutely nothing we could have done bigger for the EOS public blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's so huge, is all of a sudden there's going to be this one account, one vote model, or this unique identity. Actually, on the blockchain, there's going to be so many apps can pop up. It's just, what a tool. It's amazing.
We learned from Steemit that you can't rely on just stakeholder interest. If you got $1 million worth of Steem, you'd think you'd vote for the best interest of the platform. But that hypothesis that stake alone drives good behavior was disproven by Steemit. Mm-hmm. And that was very educational. We're trying to combine those lessons, that it's a combination of stake and identity, that are, all these things are experiments in some respect, but we have a lot of confidence in what we're doing with Voice.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. I haven't signed up for the beta yet, but right when I get back to my hotel room, it's coming in. So, excellent. Thank you guys.
Awesome. Thank you for coming.
And now let's hop straight into Dimitri from the EOS Writer interviewing Brendan and Dan.
Maybe can we talk a little bit more about the voice?
And
it seems like there's a lot of information that you still have, you know, in the background, kind of keeping to you closer to the vest. So maybe can you share a little bit more about what, you know, what the expectations are from the voice? For instance, the tokenomics part was not very clear.
Sure, sure. I can elaborate on that. Voice versus the voice. Let's try to separate that. When you're referring to it, call it voice. And the idea is that we want to have the fairest distribution of tokens to create an economy for ideas. So every single user has their identity verified, and we're trying to make that as easy and seamless as possible. And once that identity's been verified, we can now give users tokens every single day. So one of the things we're doing is we're getting a whole lot of users so that they can all start receiving at the same time. So the early sign-up process is about giving time for people to learn about it, sign up, and so we can onboard everybody and start the races at the same time. And that's part of our efforts to keep it fair. So the token model is going to give people more tokens per day initially, and then it's going to taper off, kind of like Bitcoin does,
okay,
until eventually there's going to be a constant number of tokens everyone receives per day. But it's going to be it's going to reward the people who sign up early in the first year a lot more than the people who sign up later years. Then, once you have the tokens, there's going to be inflation on top of the tokens. We're going to create tokens proportional to the number of tokens already out there, and those are going to be distributed among all the people who produce content that is liked. It will operate similar to Steemit, except with real identities, one vote per person. It doesn't matter how many tokens you have, your vote counts equally. And you know, the reward curve is going to be not linear, like Steemit went to, but a hybrid where it's a little bit exponential at first and then goes linear. The idea is we want to reward the content that gets a consensus among a lot of users that that this content is good, not just content that is liked by a couple of friends. If you and your five friends all get around and like something, it's not going to get so much. But if you get likes from hundreds of people where it's difficult to collude, that's when the rewards will really start paying off. So we're really trying to address all the lessons I learned from Steemit of how power is abused. Voice is about having real people, real votes, likes in this case, we call them likes, not votes. So real people, real likes to distribute the rewards.
Yeah, I guess that was one of the bigger questions about voice from the community. How do you ensure that your voice is not manipulated? So people were suggesting, what if I create a syndicate of my friends who, they like my posts, I like their posts, and there's, as you said, there's 100 of them, for instance, in that syndicate. How do you avoid that?
Well, the way the reward system has worked, the really popular content on Twitter and Facebook gets hundreds and hundreds and thousands of likes.
Yeah.
We believe that content's going to far outweigh the syndicates. If there is widespread abuse of any particular form, we have plans to allow community governance to deal with it. But it's our hope that with your identity tied to your account and the reputational risk, as well as the social pressure, if you participate in one of these syndicates, everyone's going to know it. It's all transparent. It's right there on the blockchain. So you'd basically have to say, I'm working to game the system. I'm working to steal from everyone else. And it's going to burn your reputation, not just on voice, but everywhere else in your life. So we think that identity creates powerful incentives for everyone to behave in a much more civilized way.
And on a broad level, to answer that question, one is because everyone is a real person and these are identified accounts, those types of patterns become really easy to spot. And the second thing is that you know, we're designing the algorithms specifically, as he was briefly mentioning at the beginning, to counteract that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. In terms of one voice has one identity behind it, so there's got to be some sort of a KYC process behind it, I guess. Are there any details that you can
share? Yeah, we're working to make a process that's as easy and painless for the users as possible, mm-hmm. that is compatible with as many regulatory environments, so we can allow the tokens to be transferred to as many people in as many jurisdictions as possible, but as low a standard as possible, mm-hmm. to make things easy.
And yeah, to add on to that is that every country is different.
Right.
Verifying an identity is in China is not the same as America, it's not the same in Europe. So the reality is that it's a more complex answer, and it's coming from on a country by country basis, basically.
Yeah. So we've been doing a lot of research into ways of doing identity and unique person validation without using government IDs, mm-hmm. And the like. But initially, government IDs will be an element of how you sign up to Voice. But none of that information that you provide to verify your identity and your residence and things like that will be on the blockchain. So you don't have to worry about all your information being out there, but your name and your residence will be.
Okay, got it. The voice token, O, right? Did you call it O token?
No, just Voice.
Just Voice, okay.
That's not the logo.
Oh, that's the logo, right?
That's the logo for the token.
Okay. Is the token going to be transferable and tradable?
Yes, on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis.
Okay, so it can be traded, right?
Yes.
People with higher reputation who
yes.
have more Voice tokens will be able to trade. Okay.
Yes. Now, that doesn't allow them to manipulate the rewards, because the rewards are not mm-hmm. based off of how many Voice tokens you have. They're based off of your identity. But what it does do is it essentially brings transparency to paid influence on the platform. If you think of how it works in Facebook, is people go and they spend USD, and then they put ads in our feeds, and we don't know how they're being calculated, and it's completely misaligned. The money's going to a group of shareholders, and no value gets passed to the users. So the Voice token is really just a mechanism we use, right, to create decentralize that control amongst the user base and give them an equal chance to participate in that type of influence.
Social media is an attention economy.
Yes.
Users have a limited amount of attention, for both what they can see, and you basically need to create a means of managing the supply and demand, right? Demand to see content, the demand to promote content, and vice versa. The Voice token is just a means by which the Voice community interacts with each other and discovers the price to have what they say heard by other people. Because mm-hmm. having other people see and hear you is scarce. And it prevents the spamming and the other annoying aspects of social media, where people just try to shout louder than other people. You can now be civilized, and if you produce good content that other people enjoyed hearing, mm-hmm. you've earned the privilege of having your voice heard by other people.
Sure.
And the Voice token is what mediates that.
Okay. So you brought up Facebook a little bit, and you're now getting into crosshair of all the social media giants like Twitter and Facebook. I'm not very concerned about Twitter, because it seems they're running more or less autonomously, and in terms of the management, they're more friendly, I guess, to other competitors. But Facebook, Zuck is known for crushing competition, or willing to crush competition, whether by acquisition or by just stealing their idea. Plus, they're coming out with their own cryptocurrency now. What do you think?
I'm going to comment on that real quick. So, the Facebook token that's been announced is called Global Coin, and it's essentially a pegged token to a basket of currency assets on a global basis. It's really just a stable coin, something that we already have many of. So what they're really doing is they're moving into payments. Okay. You can call it cryptocurrency because it sits on a blockchain, but I think it's a far stretch from the values of the blockchain-based ecosystem, and definitely the decentralized ecosystem.
Ultimately, what voice is doing is it's decentralizing a lot of the what would normally take place in something like the ad revenue of Facebook back to the users through attention-based tokens, right? Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, if Facebook really wants to be competitive to a platform like voice, they're going to have to accept that the size of their organization would need to shrink by 80 to 90%. Because when you're taking the value away from the shareholders and you're driving it back to the users themselves, mm-hmm. There's a lot of value that the company loses. We're not building voice to be a $500 billion company. We're building voice to be a widely used platform that drives most of the value back to the users themselves.
Okay. When you said you're building voice to be, I guess, the mainstream, more or less, or how do you try, how will you penetrate that mainstream audience? What will make regular non-crypto?
You've seen the event we did yesterday. That's just the first taste of what we have planned for getting voice to mainstream users.
But ultimately, a bet on voice is a bet on the idea of tokenization. Ultimately, what we're seeing in tokenization is that by allowing your users to take part in the upside of a platform, right? We're seeing things go from 0 to 100 in record times. Cryptocurrency is the most viral thing the world's ever seen in terms of time of adoption. And so we firmly believe that by allowing users to participate, we think that the rewards are going to be meaningful, and it's going to be and that's actually going to drive a ton of adoption. Mm-hmm. And when you take a look at influencers that are sitting on top of large platforms like Facebook, Instagram, you know, they may get paid $1 million a post to do something, but and the reality is on equivalent of something like on voice, they may still get paid by $1 million a post by advertisers, but it's very possible that in the future they could make millions of dollars in addition to that in voice tokens if it gets the right adoption amongst the public. So we think that the incentives, the upside incentives, are so magnetic that it will actually draw people away from these networks. And when you start with the influencers, which we have a lot of, you know, we're a lot of focus on, the rest will follow. So we're not approaching this in a way is, you know, we hope they all come. We're taking a very calculated approach to how we're going to market this and how we're going to start to strip the influencers from existing platforms and move them over to voice.
Okay. Wow. There's a lot of influencers that have already been deplatformed that are looking for a new home.
Yes.
We hope to provide that home.
Do you have a strategy to specifically target influencers on other platforms?
We absolutely do. But they'll be very clear in short order. Absolutely.
We're willing in deploying voice in a very methodical, staged, incremental plan. So, mm-hmm. you know, this event was all about announcing to the world, hey, we're here, we're coming for you. Start signing up and gathering users. We'll be rolling out parts, and when the time's right, we'll be bringing influencers on board.
Got it, okay. Great. I guess another question or comment that arose yesterday after the meeting, there was really not much talk about the roadmap for Block One.
So the roadmap was published on ESIO at the same time. We probably should have said something at the event.
Okay.
So we call it our strategic vision.
Okay.
And the idea was that a roadmap is very linear and it's got dates on it, but we were working on so many things in parallel that a roadmap just doesn't make sense. And a lot of the things we're doing are cutting edge research like EOS VM. And we don't know until we get the results of that research whether or not that's the direction we're ultimately going to go in.
Mm-hmm.
So we highlighted all the different areas we're researching, the things we hope to achieve, and so you can kind of see the stuff we're thinking about and the stuff we're working on. So that's this entirely new ESIO that was launched last night, kind of stealth in light of the event. But I encourage you to revisit ESIO to really see, because there's a whole story and lots of gems that you could probably pull out of that.
That's good. Why this event was held here in DC? I think there were talks about you guys opening a DC office at some point. Is that rumors or?
Brendan, why do we do it here?
Alrighty, we haven't made any public announcement, but we are opening an office in Arlington, Virginia, just right outside DC. We'll be making that a little bit more public soon. But to be quite honest, we're already very rooted nearby. So Dan is, in Blacksburg, and this is a very close nexus to us. So, we've been between here and Blacksburg on an ongoing basis. So, but yes, we do have plans to start expanding beyond mm-hmm. Blacksburg here.
And DC is an international city. People mm-hmm. from all over the world coming in. It's got great airports, great transportation.
So it also has a lot of security-led engineers, cryptographers, and things very relevant to the types of people things we build. So we actually think that this DC Beltway, Arlington, is one of the most rich talent environments for the type of development work that we do.
Mm-hmm. It's also in great proximity to the biggest client in probably the world, right? The U.S. government.
It's close to all the regulators that we deal with on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Regulators, clients, engineers. And because of the DC, it has a tremendous international access to all the other international locations that we go. So direct flights to Hong Kong, where our headquarters are, these types of things. So DC is a really convenient place for Block 1 to be building. And so our first step is, a modest expansion into the area, and we'll take it from there.
Got it. Okay. Any plans to move your main office from Hong Kong to here eventually?
Main office is right now, we have an international headquarters, but no immediate plans to move our headquarters to the United States yet. Everything's going to come down to depend on how our business continues to develop, how regulations develop, all these types of things. We'll continue to do whatever's best for the community and what's best for our shareholders. Those things are sort of details of structuring opposed to actually any impact on our business or our products.
EOS resources. So I spoke with multiple people who are laymen to the cryptocurrency, and that whole idea kind of gets them pretty confused. Is there, like buying RAM, staking, and all that? Are there any plans to try to solve that problem so that EOS goes mainstream?
We're trying to set an example with Voice. We want to show other developers how they can provide an experience to users where the resource management is on the app developer, not on the end user.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We're eating our own dog food, but we're providing all the RAM for using Voice. Users won't have to think about RAM. And we'll also be providing all the CPU resources for interacting with Voice. Now, if users want to interact with other apps on EOS, they might have to acquire some of their own EOS and stake, but we hope that the other apps that they build on will provide that for them as well. So we're trying to set the example. We're also trying to increase the availability of resources by testing EOS.io with 320 million users and a terabyte of RAM. We know that the network can safely scale as soon as we get all the block producers in full nodes to increase capacity. So RAM can get cheaper in time. And we also know with things like EOSVM that the amount of CPU time per token staked is going to grow up dramatically.
And I want to touch on that point that you said. You said, is there ability to make it easier to make it go mainstream? Ultimately, application development and the hosting of that on public blockchains mm-hmm. is never going mainstream. It never needs to, right? It's mm-hmm. a small subset of people in the world. A developer, when you're calling up AWS and you're buying Elastic hosting packages and stuff, that's not mainstream.
Sure. Yeah.
And it never will be because it doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
The reality is I believe wholeheartedly that we've made it about as easy as it's going to get. Now, the real question is it going to scale? Is it going to get cheaper? And absolutely, that gets into multi-threaded execution and stuff, and we started putting our first steps, of that forward yesterday, and Dan can talk a little bit about that if you want to go more detail into it. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to when developers are able to buy some RAM, get some RECs for their resources, this is relatively easy compared to other business models on other blockchains, which basically start throwing gas transactions or other types of things onto every user action of any of your applications. So what we're actually building is something very similar to what exists in non-blockchain based environments, we agree that the cost over time will continue to go down as blockchain scales, but EOS is already the most scalable when you actually look at what you pay and what you get for what you pay. There's nothing that comes close.
Got it, okay. Question about ESVCs. Are you happy with their work today and the pace of their investment in various ES projects?
So ESVC is just starting, and we continue to evolve the program. There's several investments that we made that we're really very excited about. You know, you're looking at key management from groups like Blizzard Entertainment, that started Mythical Games, mm-hmm. High Fidelity, these groups. We continue to see the EOS community evolve in terms of the maturity of their projects. Ultimately, what we didn't want to do is start funding lots of early stage projects that didn't have the full understanding of what their product was, how they were going to deploy it, what the token economics were. And there's still a big gap in the market. There's a lot of people that say, oh, I want to go build a blockchain-based application, but their ideas and their teams just aren't up the level. And we didn't want to sacrifice that just to start deploying capital, because ultimately we want to play the long game and make sure that EOS can win. A lot of the capital has not still been, the vast majority of it has still not been deployed. Now, we're still building the robustness of the EOSVC ecosystem. We're still adding GPs. To who can invest. We're working with those GPs and installing internal teams to help them understand blockchain, because it takes a whole ecosystem. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is make sure that the projects are at the level that they're going to succeed. And so we're trying not to get rushed into it. But we're still at the very early stages of that program.
We're going for quality over quantity, making sure that the people are talented, like Brendan said. The biggest challenge is finding the number of teams out there, and we know that will come in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Media, we kind of touched base about it a little bit. So most of the media covering crypto-related news is centralized and operated using an old-school newsroom model. What do you think about the concept of a crypto media organization specifically, decentralized and unbiased and tokenized approach?
Well, Voice is about giving a platform to everyone who wants to enter the business to make it easier for journalists like yourself to monetize what you do, to build an audience, and to be rewarded for producing content that the readers want. The existing media infrastructure is all about what the advertisers want. We hope by giving everybody voice, not just to voice their opinions, but to decide whose content gets rewarded, will help reward those who produce the content that meets the market demand of the readers rather than the demand of the advertisers. So we really hope that Voice creates a really marketplace for ideas.
We also, we partnered at EOS Writer with a company called Moran in China, and they're covering, you know, that whole region, which is gigantic. You know, the number of crypto users there is easily 10 times, 100 times to what we have here in the Western world. There were some questions coming from the Chinese audience asking, because of the coverage of EOS, because of the interest in EOS in China, why are you guys not doing any of the events in mainland China, like hackathons or events like this? Are you planning to do any of them in mainland China?
We do have plans for China, and we still do have an active approach in terms of how we communicate with China. But China is a very, very different regulatory environment, and so the way that we approach China is operating in the constraints of that environment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Keep doing the great work.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to Dan and Brendan from the EOS Writer and the EOS Podcast. As you guys may have started to get inklings of, the EOS Podcast, the first podcast in the history of EOS, and the EOS Writer have been teaming up on some big media projects lately, and we're going to continue that relationship. So what's been cool about the EOS Writer is to see them jump on the scene as one of the main media sources that's trusted for very quality curated and, most importantly, very timely information about EOS. So if you guys are looking for somewhere to find what's really going on in EOS right now, the EOS Writer is what is really going on right now. So check it out. Also check out the EOS Podcast. Cheers, my EOS friends. This was What an honor. What an absolute honor to get to talk to Brendan and Dan and meet so many people from the EOS community. I mean, I'm sure I speak for Dimitri as well when I say that so many quality minds and people. Is just what a beautiful experience to be in DC for the announcement. Much love to each and every one of you, my EOS friends. This is rad. You know, we do this because we all love it. So really proud to be a part of this with all of you. Cheers.
The money is not the prime asset in life.